All right, welcome, welcome everyone to August 2021, I believe, LHON Live. It is our, well, we'll get to that in a second. Jessica, how are you?
Oh, I'm pretty wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing pretty well. I'm enjoying some very pleasant weather in North Carolina these days. It's nice to have a yard. It's nice to have some time in a pool. Nice to be away from home for a little bit and still be working. What's new with you? I know I was late to the last call. So what's been going on the last couple months? How's Denver?
Oh, Denver's fantastic. I wish it would cool down just a smidge, but this morning when I walked outside, it was 62 and raining. So I felt like I got a little glimpse of fall. But I also just got a notification on my phone that there has been traces of E. coli. So I'm supposed to boil all water. So you're going to hear my tea kettle here in a hot second. Because I'm like, what water will I feed my... Now my dog's on bottled water.
I see what
like,
you did there.
But I'm thank you. But yeah, cute little Jackie's going to get bottled water. So he's going to turn into this little diva. So it's... But other than that, we're doing fantastic.
Okay. Well, that's good.
So did you fly or train to North Carolina? Because last time you trained it.
Yeah, last time I trained it. This time I flew. And it was a pretty pleasant experience. I'm Googling something real fast to say later in the call. But yeah, it was a pretty good experience for the most part.
Cool.
Kind of felt normal again. Obviously I was masked, and I've been fully vaccinated and felt relatively comfortable, but yeah, things have been weird. I've been here now for, I guess a week and a half, something like that. I should say that my flight wasn't amazing because initially I got there Monday night at 6:30. And I didn't actually get on a plane until Wednesday morning at 5 a.m. Home between that because things were delayed and then canceled and stuff. But I'm here now. As far as a flight that was going to be canceled, that was a good one. I was not coming here for any special reason other than to spend time with family. So it was the best flight that could be postponed.
You know, I am hearing a lot of flights getting delayed. My flight was delayed actually coming home a couple weeks ago. And my mom actually called to book a flight. She booked one today and had mentioned that Southwest was actually telling people that there are a lot of flights delayed. So that's very interesting. So that makes a fun travel experience.
From what I understand, a lot of pilots probably were done piloting when they didn't need many pilots, and now they need all the pilots back and they aren't coming back as fast, and they've canceled a bunch of flights. So they're just fewer working in general, but it's coming back. Things are wary again with the news not being fantastic, pandemic related, but I'll be optimistic. We got to do what we got to do.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, let's get right into it.
I love a good dose of optimism.
Yeah, of course. For those of you who are here, maybe it's your first time, maybe it's your 12 times 7 plus.
I actually quoted this when we missed you last month, Andy. I was like, Andy would know exactly 80. What number it is.
It's like our 85th call. So today is actually our 7th anniversary. I don't think I've gotten any of your presents yet, but I'm sure they're in the mail. So happy 7th anniversary.
Coming.
For LHO and live to everyone here.
Oh,
I'm curious. We'll ask when we open back up. I'm curious if there's anyone here tonight who was on our first call ever. I think so in my memory, but I'm curious. I know there are people who were on our call by November. There's one person I know who was our guest speaker in November of that year, 2014. But yeah, so it's 2021 now, August 2021. So we've been doing this for 7 years. For those of you who don't know the spiel, I'm sure everyone on the call could give it to you, but I'll give it to you tonight. We started these calls after Jessica and I had the pleasure of meeting each other back in June of 2014. We were both at our first LHON conference there in Pittsburgh, PA, and quickly realized how beneficial and just helpful and impactful it is to meet other people going through what we've been through, living the life that we lead, and how unique and yet shared our experiences are. that there, you may meet other blind people, you may meet other people with disabilities, but meeting other people with LHON live, or sorry, wow, with LHON, is different. They share experiences with you, they share diagnoses, stories with you, and your lives are very similar while maybe never having met ever before. So we realized those benefits and thought, hey, there's got to be a way to spread this benefit throughout the year without coming to Pittsburgh every month. Love to Pittsburgh, by the way, but we wanted to be able to do that throughout the year. And so it took us a couple months, but by August of 2014, we were doing these calls every month. And we've done that since then. So there have been, like I said, 80 some odd calls, and we have changed the format over the years. But for the most part, these days, Jessica and I get together every month. We bring topics from the Facebook group and from other interesting news stories in the LHON community to talk about. Right now, you'll notice that everyone's muted other than the two of us. We will talk about those topics, and then we'll open up the call for everyone else. When I open up the call, there are a few things that we try and steer the conversation away from, not because we're afraid of these topics or because there's some kind of conspiracy, but because, frankly, we're not experts. We're not experts when it comes to employment advice, legal advice, medical advice, probably more than either of the other two. So if you have questions like that, feel free to bring them here, but our answer is probably going to be directing you toward an expert rather than giving you advice from us. With that, Jessica, happy anniversary, and let's get kicked off. Oh, I did. I looked this up. I looked up what the traditional anniversary gift is for your seventh anniversary. And this says the traditional gift for a seventh anniversary are copper and wool. So for anyone who wants to send us presents, copper and wool are the traditional gifts. Copper is durable. So send us some pennies. That'd be great. And so,
or a wool rug. I'm actually in the market.
I feel like one of those is less expensive, but happy anniversary to all of you. And let's get things kicked off. So first, I wanted to bring up a topic that I think was just posted today or very recently in the group. And it was about a podcast. I think the podcast is from The Daily, but the episode is called, Is There a Right Way to Act Blind? Which is something we've talked about a lot on these calls over the years. But I thought it was really interesting, and I encourage you all to listen to the podcast that I haven't listened to yet. But in essence, it was a deep dive into a specific TV show called, I think it's a show called In the Dark, and some casting decisions that were made. The main character on the show is a blind woman, and the casting department made the decision to hire a sighted person for that role. And the question is that okay? They got a lot of backlash for it. They didn't change their decision, but they interviewed, or a lot of this podcast was done from the perspective of someone who's blind, and I should say is blind in the same way that a lot of people with LHON are, meaning this person has some usable vision. They can get around okay without obvious indicators that they are blind. And for that reason, they're constantly called a fake, or they're told they're not blind, they're not really blind, or they're not blind the way you're supposed to be blind. And the question that the podcast is trying to answer is like, what is the right way to be blind? Is there a right way to be blind? And I mean, it makes me think like, okay, when it comes to representation, I, like many of you, think we should, if possible, have representation effectively in these shows. One, because those roles can't be, or these actors who have disabilities may not be eligible for other roles, and they should be eligible for some roles, but it also adds a genuineness, a sincerity to the performances, which I think is really cool as well. But I mean, I guess you could easily ask a question, hey, if a character is totally blind, can a legally blind or partially sighted person play that role? And where, what is right and what is wrong in that case? I'll pass it over to you, Jessica. What are your thoughts on this topic? And do you know anything that I don't know?
Yeah, the topic's really tricky. And I think there's something to be said about being able to have the opportunity for somebody that's blind, low vision, or everything in between, play that role. One, employment rate is down. So like, let's get them employed and get them paying for something that they have a passion about. First of all, like my employment spiel. But second of all, like, so one, I know of a commercial that actually, so the concept of the commercial is talking about audio description. And I know the person, I know the person, not personally, that was hired for the role in the commercial is also blind. So I don't know to what degree, but that person was hired specifically because they are blind in a commercial for audio description, just trying to like kind of hone in on the authenticity of the product and of the concept. I was actually recently in a photo shoot for another product because I had low vision, and they were like, tell me how you do it. Like, what does it look like? And so it was just me being real, you know, like I was sitting at the kitchen counter with my iPad and what does it look like? Well, let me show you, like nose to iPad, zoom in, zoom out, have a bite of dinner, zoom in, zoom out, have a bite of dinner. Like that's for real, right? Like I think we all can kind of relate to that in some sort of fashion. And so, yeah, that's what the pictures are of me sitting there at a kitchen table. And it looked kind of like kitchen was a little bit cuter than mine, just gonna say. But it was cool to see that this was rolling out, that there is kind of a little bit of this movement of these questions getting brought up and people seeing, I say people like the mass public in general, seeing that there's an importance to having that authenticity when you're looking to share a story within a sitcom or sell something or anything like that. You know, realness always sells better than whatever.
Can I get more details on this photo shoot you did? What was the product for?
I don't know if you can get details on the photo shoot, but I can tell you that the I think that's coming, TBD, super fun. But the commercial is actually Spectrum Access. So the commercial, and it's in, if you're in Spectrum Access,
the commercial
in their
is what?
Footprint.
Spectrum Access.
Spectrum
okay.
Access. So if you're in the Spectrum footprint and that's your like tele or cable internet provider, you will actually see this commercial, and it's of a girl, and they actually, obviously the commercial has audio description. There's a guy sitting on the couch and he's watching, I think they're eating popcorn too. So yeah, like, you know all this because of the audio description, which is cool. He's sitting on the couch, he's eating his popcorn. She comes in and she has to like leave for something, and or no, vice versa. She's sitting on the couch, she's eating popcorn, he has to leave because she has audio description in her ear with Spectrum Access. When he comes back, she like catches him up, like, oh hey, you missed this. When normally, gosh, you sit at the couch and your kind of like sighted guide, more or less, watching TV with you. If they leave, you like miss out. So it's a pretty cool commercial, and yeah, the girl's visually impaired.
That's awesome. I love that story.
Yeah, so I was like, that's pretty cool. So I think it's cool that it's the movement is kind of happening. And so yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like my default answer would be, hey, we should have representation everywhere we can have representation. Like they should be.
Totally.
And you can follow that to a point of, I know what some people would be like, oh, like that's what acting is. Acting is about living an experience of someone who's not you. That like, there are times where people play Stephen Hawking. I won an Oscar for it.
Yeah.
And like that is not Stephen Hawking. That is not a guy who is dealing with all of what Stephen Hawking has to deal with. But
yeah,
I do think we need to do it everywhere we can. And frankly, when I say everywhere we can, there are lots of places we can, and there are more places we can than where we can. So yeah, that's my take. There's also, for anyone interested, there was a post about Ability Magazine or by Ability Magazine. I believe someone shared it on the page, basically talking about how they have helped recently actors with disabilities get jobs with Disney Plus and Netflix and Hulu for a lot of their shows. So if any of you have an acting bug or an acting itch you want to scratch, feel free to check out Ability Magazine and register with them. Let's move on to another topic here, Jessica. We had a few posts related to this, but more importantly, we just worldwide, we've been celebrating and or watching and or being aware of the Olympics going on. And more recently, the Paralympics began or are about to begin. I'm sorry if I got that wrong. About that. So I know we have one LHON community member, Noah Malone, competing in track and field. I know in the past we've had lots, and we may have even more that I don't know about. But Have you watched any Olympics? What's your experience watching the Olympics like? Do you watch the Paralympics? What's your experience like there?
Yes, I choose D. Yes, all the above. Yeah, so audio, for the record, Paralympics will have audio description. So scope it out. It's supposed to be amazing. And I'm super excited to kind of see what that is, what it's like. But yeah, that'll all have audio description. So kind of a cool side story. I got to actually meet a person that was in the Paralympics at one point. And it was so cool to be able to talk to a Paralympian because it's just, it's a different level, right? Like, yeah, like to be an athlete is super cool, but to be a Paralympian and kind of be at that different level of athleticism is just remarkable. I mean, one, it's a career, but two, it's also just how do you get to that point and what's your support look like and how does it, what changes? And, you know, like still some of the same difficulties we face on a day-to-day basis in the sense of employment, like different barriers we kind of have to hurdle over, but on a lighter note,
look at
like,
you calling out hurdles.
I know, right? I did watch the, what is it, synchronized diving or something. That's actually all that I've been able to jump into, and they are so cool. And I was cheering for, I mean, any underdog and whatever quote unquote an underdog is in the Olympics, because I was just like, yeah, just come up from the bottom and take on gold or something. But no,
I love watching sports like synchronized diving and like pretending I'm a judge and be like, no, that was awful. Like, as if I know anything. But it was right. One that was bad.
Or when they're like, oh, otherwise they're all perfect. Off. And I'm like, right? Yeah. I'm like, oh. Or they're like, oh, that was a smidge off. And I was like, for real? Let me zoom in on that again. Like,
yeah, let me slow this down, zoom way in and pretend I'm a judge. Yeah.
Exactly. But also, I'll remember back in the day, this is gospel, when I was a childhood, in my childhood, I remember a lot of cool music and concerts and for the Olympics. Like, I don't know, I remember Celine Dion, anybody else remember that? But where's the concert? Is that just like opening ceremonies and closing? Is that a thing? But I mean,
opening ceremony is a thing, but you may be referring to, well, I'm trying to think. Celine Dion, if I'm not mistaken, is Canadian, right? Am I getting that wrong? Someone's gonna correct me.
Yeah, no, she is Canadian.
So have there been a winter?
I put my phone on the charger.
There have been Olympics in Canada. Yeah. Generally, you'd have someone. It sounds like just unmuted. Just letting you know.
You can just go to Zoom and hit the Zoom link.
It looks like whoever's talking right now. It seems like you may have accidentally unmuted. Just to let you know, but. Jessica, I think generally you're gonna have concerts by the nation that is holding or hosting the Olympics. So yes, there were intro ceremonies this year, but they didn't have any audience members, so it was quite different.
Yeah, that is different, but no, it's been a blast to watch, and so I'm really excited for Paralympics to kick off and. Just to kind of hear about the different sports and to be able to hear stories from Paralympians is remarkable, but even cooler is that we get audio descriptions so we now can finally be a part of it instead of, you know, nose to screen. So I think that's super cool.
Cool. That's all I have on that one. I want to move on to another topic. This one was mentioned twice, and I'm sure we've talked about this before, but I don't have a very solid answer to this. But twice someone asked, I think different people, asked what handheld magnifiers we recommend having. I know Wayne has a handheld magnifier he carries all the time. I remember Richie had one that he carried all the time. I don't remember you having a handheld magnifier you carry all the time, Jessica, but do you use something like that? And if so, what? I can't hear you if you're there.
Andy, can you hear me now?
I can hear you now. Yep.
Okay, cool. I actually lost you when you were like, and I heard can't hear you. So I was like, that's funny. I don't use a handheld magnifier. I actually use my cell phone for literally everything, from reading mail to everything, reading a food expiration label. So I use that. I use the magnifier. So I do the access button. So I triple tap for that. So either VoiceOver comes on or a magnifier. So kind of depending what I'm looking for, I can just kind of toggle between the two of them. And yeah, I mean, gosh, when I'm like looking for a box in the mailroom that's with like 600 other boxes in my apartment complex, and I have to get like search for my own name. Yeah, bust out my iPhone and magnify every address label. So I really got to like get an in with my mailman or something to like, so he puts in one spot, but that's a whole different story. What do you use?
I use the magnifier on my phone, but I access it a different way than you do. So I have it in my, I'm trying to think, what is this called? Control center, maybe? So if you have a newer iPhone that doesn't have a home button, if you pull from the top right corner down to the middle of the screen, you get what I'm calling the control center, where you can access things like brightness or your orientation lock or your low battery or your camera. I have the magnifier on there so I can go here and then touch it and then I get a magnifier. I like keeping my triple tap just for voiceover, especially when I'm trying to turn it off. I want to be able to turn it off quickly and not have to like triple tap and then find something else to tap. Because we've all
that's a great idea. So you do control center.
I think that's what it's called. Okay. Yeah, so you can get like there that. By if you go into your settings, and I believe it's control center. I'm gonna verify this as we're here. Because
no, I think you're right.
So I went to settings and then typing control center, and I'm not seeing it. We can look up what that section's called. But you have the ability to edit what you have in there. So if you don't want camera there, you don't want your calculator there, you can change what's in there. I have my magnifier in there because I like being able to access that very easily. Yeah.
I love that idea because then you can always triple tap for voiceover on off as needed, but then you can like swipe for magnifier so you can kind of have both at hand when you need it.
Exactly.
Oh, I like that.
I know we have a couple other topics here, but I think I may skip over a couple because we've had good conversations so far and I want to open it up to others. Go ahead.
I actually have a perfect segue for this one. Can I pop in really quick?
Yeah, please. You're doing exactly what I think I was going to do.
Oh, you are? Okay. I'm sorry.
No, do it. It's all yours.
Perfect segue for assistive technology. So there is a ton of really cool Facebook groups that are out there related to LHON within like the LHON umbrella. And one of them is assistive technology. Sarah actually recently posted within the main LHON group on assistive technology and just was looking to promote it and obviously get some traction and get some people in there because, you know, the more people we have in a group that's sharing tips, tricks, and ideas, the better it is. So, if you have a handheld magnifier that you think is, you know, thebomb.com, jump into the assistive technology Facebook group, share what you like about it, what you don't like about it, so others can kind of learn there. Obviously, feel free to share it in the main group, but like, let's try to like keep all of that assistive technology centric information in that group would be awesome.
Love it. Love it. Love it. I'm gonna skip over a couple of topics, but the last thing I do want to do is we try and save a few like calendar details here to say at the end. And I will let you all know that September 11th, there's a webinar being hosted by the Foundation Fighting Blindness. I'm sure if you Googled September 11th, Foundation Fighting Blindness or FFB webinar, you can find details on that. I believe it's free. So if you're interested in that, enjoy. But with that, we're going to open it up in just a second. But before I open it up, I always like to remind you all that these calls, again, are every month, the first Wednesday of every month, which next month means it's the first day of the month. So September 1st, always the same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific here in the U.S. And same phone number, save everything, details like that. If there are topics you would like us to talk about, keep them to yourself. No, I'm just kidding. Please reach out to Jessica, reach out to me. You can find us on Facebook. You can find our phone numbers and text us. You can send me a message on TikTok or Instagram or Twitter. We will take them any way you send them to us. LHONlive@gmail.com is our email address that we check religiously just to make sure we still have no emails. But if you'd like to send us an email to say hello or that we're doing a great job or that you want us to talk about something, you can reach us there. Thank you all. I missed you all last month, if you can tell. And with that, Jessica, any parting words before I open up the call?
No, happy anniversary. I hope you enjoy the wool rug I've sent you.
I cannot wait. Happy anniversary to you all. I'm going to open it up just so you all know. We are still recording, but if you'd like to say something after the recording is turned off, we will turn the recording off in a bit, at which point you can say something at that point. But for now, we're going to keep the recording going. I believe the recording will begin again from the same place. So this would be the first time I've ever done this, but I meant to unmute you all. I'm all out of practice. You can begin unmuting yourself by pressing.
Star six.
Exactly. or you can respond to my request when I ask you all to unmute, which I just did now. So you may have a notification asking everyone to unmute, and you can respond to that to unmute, or you can say your questions now. Welcome, welcome. If you have questions about anything from representation and casting to Olympics to handheld magnifiers, we're all ears.
Hello, this is John Benson from Central Washington again. Hello.
Hey, John.
Based on a conversation that was had last month, I've been thinking. Last month, a woman called and she has two kids based out of Northern Idaho, and one of them has LHON, the other one doesn't yet. And she said it was very smoky because of the forest fires and should her son wear a mask going outside? And the general consensus was, yeah, N95s are a good mask to use. Well, you know, so I started thinking, ultimately, I guess we don't, or the science doesn't know for sure what activates these genes we carry. It begins the degradation of our eyesight. So right. Obviously, I, you know, 1178, I was activated a year ago or so. Does exposure to smoke, will that make my eyesight worse? In other words, if we've kind of determined smoke exposure can activate the gene, are there things we should avoid that could possibly make our eyesight even worse?
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm gonna say no one here is an expert on that. From what I understand, it's a good thing to do that because most doctors would say you should try and do that in the off chance that it does make things worse. But to your point, some doctors say that the main thing that that is doing is preventing triggering the gene, which in your case and in my case, it's been triggered. But yeah. I know doctors, including Dr. Sadoun and others that are top positions here in the US would say those who are affected by LHON should avoid smoke, and that's smoke of all kinds, bonfires, cigarette smoke, whatever it may be, yeah. And should also avoid other toxins like binge drinking and things like that, even after having lost your vision. So that's the answer I think they'd give you. But again, to your point, a lot is unknown.
Yeah, well, that's what I thought, but I thought I'd, you know, almost all of you here have more experience than I do, and I thought I'd take advantage of that. Thank you.
John, this is Lissa. One thing I might encourage you to do is if you had a chance to listen to the talks during the conference, the science talks, Dr. Sadoun was the fourth of the four scientific speakers, and he did address this topic, specifically your question. And he did include visual imagery of cross sections of the optic nerve, showing a healthy optic nerve, and then various stages of not healthy to very, very unhealthy. And the point he was trying to make is that we're generally born with a full complement of 1.2 million optic nerve fibers. And when we're affected, if one is affected by LHON, the smallest ones that manage our central vision are the ones that are harmed. The largest ones that manage sensitivity to light and dark tend to stay healthy. And it's the medium ones that are sort of fighting for their lives. And some people sustain more and some sustain less. And that's why there's such a variation. So as Andy said, he talked in that talk about, you know, that you do want to avoid things that could harm your remaining 1.2 million optic nerve fibers, because you surely don't want to lose any more than you've already lost. And again, I can put the link in the chat if that's helpful, or you should have I put the link to all those talks in this month's email that I sent out over the weekend that you should have received, or you can just ask me to send it to you again and I will, but that might be helpful.
I did receive, is that the same email that I get that allows the connection with the Zoom call?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. It's in there. Mm-hmm.
Well, awesome. Thank you so much. It gets smoky because of the forest fires in Central Washington as well. And if wearing a N95 mask, I live alone. COVID isn't an issue for me. It's my fear of possibly degrading my eyesight even more that I prompted me to ask the question in the first place.
No, I appreciate the question, John. Thank you so much. Yep.
Andy, I have a question for you about the podcast that you were talking about that was talking about the TV show with the not blind actor. Is that the show on the CW? Because the NFC did a demonstration against that one, but I didn't know if we were talking about the same TV show.
The show is called In the Dark. I'm trying to answer your question through some quick Googling as we talk, but I will let you know later on in the call. It just takes me a while to Google.
The article I read about the one that I was familiar with, the actress does all of these things that are so like stereotypical blind person, like trying to touch somebody's face and that kind of thing. And they were real upset about the way the blind person was being portrayed in that TV show. So I didn't know.
I anticipate it is In the Dark. It's an American TV series on, let's see, starring blah, blah, blah. Composer, nope. Sorry, yes, it is the CW.
Yeah. The NFB was not too happy with their portrayal of blind people.
Yep, and to my understanding, that's what the podcast is dealing with. Like, what is, like, how does one act blind on a, when this is an invisible thing? And frankly, I think it'd be cool if they found other ways to portray it, like what you're talking about. But the difficulty is it's for an audience who doesn't understand the nuances of blindness, but so often entertainment and media can be the place that educates folks. I know it's been the place where people are educated on lots of issues, including, I mean, different sexualities than those that they're used to, or whatever it may be, different racial experiences. And there's no reason why it can't be a way to introduce folks to the life of someone who has a disability in a respectful way.
I had something for Alyssa. This is Paul from Philadelphia. John from Central Washington was saying that wearing an N95 mask to avoid the smoke from the fires in Washington or Oregon and California. Well, I'm wondering, is it the problem inhaling the smoke, or is the problem the smoke contacting the eyes? I mean, can the smoke, the irritants get in the eye and go into the optic nerve, or does it actually go through the breathing? I mean, does a mask help, or does it?
It's inhaling.
Okay, that's inhaling. What I'm wondering.
The issue is, and again, this is all in that video with Dr. Sadoun gave a talk at the most recent conference. But the issue is that when you inhale smoke, it has reactive oxygen species, and that's toxic to the mitochondria. And so our mitochondria is already functioning at a suboptimal level because of the mutation. And so it's struggling to process the amount of reactive oxygen species that it encounters on a regular basis. So when you get more from smoke, from excess alcohol, et cetera, that's the problem. So it's not getting in your eye. Your eyes are fine. It's the mitochondria, and so anytime you smell smoke, that's what he would guide you to stay away from.
And I had a question completely off the topic for everyone. Has anyone had any experience with smart microwaves, like using Alexa for a microwave? Because they had smart microwaves now. I just wondered if they're any decent or not. So
I don't know the answer to that question, but that's one we can kind of circulate around the whole group and see if someone has, but it doesn't sound like anyone here has.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you so much for the questions.
This is Lisa from Canada. I'll say happy anniversary. And your wool scarves are on the way. We probably have lots here.
Thank you.
And also, I can't say I was on the first call, but I was probably on the November call that Andy was referring to, I think.
You certainly were.
And also, you guys just taught me something regarding using your phone and stuff like that to magnify stuff. I had no idea that you could do all the little things that I obviously need iPhone and iPad training. But as far as handheld magnifiers, I do have one that I use all the time. And it's, I think it's called Eschenbach. My mom's on the line, I think, still. She could probably confirm that my mom and my stepfather bought it for me for Christmas, and I use it all the time. And it's just like it fits in the palm of your hand and it can fit in your purse or whatever. Because I'm not quite
technical. That's awesome. Love that. I remember you carried a small, like, digital magnifier when we first met you, or not carried it, but used it in the kitchen and things like that.
Yes, I did have a bigger one that was, well, we're going back 18 years, but that's how old it was. And I still have it around, but technology has changed, obviously. And unfortunately, it's not working right now, and I've been in touch with the company, and they don't even make it anymore. So I have to revert to my other one, which is totally fine. But I will try the tips that you guys gave on the phone and stuff. So be prepared. I probably will be texting or calling you saying help.
That's okay. Always allowed.
I do have a question, and because you guys are all technical people, and I know I've asked you this before, Andy, when the phone rings and you have voiceover on, sometimes there's either the red or green button, and I can see it to tap on the green button, I know. But then sometimes the slide feature comes on. But when I have my voiceover on and I try to slide, I can't pick up the phone if somebody's calling me. What am I doing wrong?
When it has the slide, you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. So if you have voiceover on, you don't actually slide because voiceover is going to view your slide as something different. You can actually touch down at the slide bar and then you can double tap to answer. Or I believe if it's on that lock screen, if you use two fingers and double tap, it will answer the call. I believe both of those will work. But you're right. The sliding isn't what you want to do. If you touch that, it will say slide to open because it's actively reading it to you. But that's not how you actually select it. You touch it and then double tap a single finger, or without touching it, double tap with two fingers.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Not a problem.
Hi, everybody. This is Nicole from Chicago. And I was just wondering, I recently went to the doctor and they think I have glaucoma on top of this. Has anybody else had to deal with that?
Someone's having their 844 alarm go off.
Or their car alarm's going off.
I hope it's not my car. I haven't heard of anyone dealing with glaucoma as a result of this. Anyone else?
I think it's like coincidental. Like, I'm super lucky to get both of these things. But I was at the doctor on Friday, and I have to go back and do this whole pulse, or all these tests to verify if I have it or not. And hopefully there's these drops that I can have to save the teeny site that I have. But I was just wondering if anybody else had gone through that.
Hi, Nicole. This is Paul from Northern California. And I have gone through what you are describing. I was very fortunate that it was actually kind of a temporary situation for me. It lasted about 5 months, and they really thought, the words you just said are exactly what they thought. Wow, this is some really, you know, a really unfortunate situation, but it looks like you have, you might have glaucoma in, you know, in at the same time as the LHON. But after about, and they put me on the drops, and I still use them to this day. But after about 5 months, my eye pressure seemed to just, nobody's really been able to explain it to me, but it just stopped rising, and sort of, you know, my peripheral vision that was affected more than it already is affected, reset back to the base level that it did, you know, 5 months prior. So I hope that might be your experience. And
I hope so too. Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
But that's awesome. Definitely did you do a test? Okay. Did they do a test for like a couple hours where you check the pulse, or, you know, keep checking your eyes throughout a couple hour span before they can give you the drops?
No, I don't remember that actually, but I have to admit that the tests sort of are, you know, after 3 years or so, are all running together in my head a lot. Yeah. So other than, as we all know. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Nicole and Paul, this is Lissa. I just kind of sent you guys a connecting Facebook message in case you guys wanted to talk further about glaucoma. And I also wanted to mention that I think Dr. Karanja talked a little bit about glaucoma in answer to a question during the conference Q&A of the science.
Okay.
And if I'm not 100% sure I've got the situation straight, but if I understand what was said, it was that it goes back to the notion of you've got 1.2 million optic nerve fibers. And so let's say half of them are damaged due to LHON. Well, that means structurally, your optic nerve is less structurally sound at that point because it has fewer fibers that are healthy and they're thinner when they atrophy. So I think he was saying that, you know, that it's not like one necessarily causes the other, but there can be sort of, they can interact in a way that's not good one for another. And then I've also heard, like, over the years, some people in the group have mentioned having glaucoma in addition to LHON. And I think glaucoma affects the peripheral vision, and obviously LHON affects the central. And it's one of those things where people often say, well, hey, I'm already blind, so I'm not going to go see another eye doctor. Why should I? And the answer is because you don't want to lose your
I want something.
So the good news is you went and saw an eye doctor, and I'm just saying that out loud in case anyone else here is thinking, well, I don't need to go because I'm already blind. Well, yeah, but you want to preserve what you still have. So you're
our little vision that we have.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, it's like people think it's nothing until they start to lose it. And then they realize they should have gone to see the eye doctor, because that can happen. You know, people who have LHON can also have glaucoma or cataracts or anything else. So just taking the opportunity to remind people that the doctors do say, get regular eye checks for this very reason.
Yeah. And I was at Tadu just less than 6 months ago. And so then I go to a doctor at Northwestern in Chicago, and she goes, we got to check this out. So it's just so quick how it goes.
Well, it's okay. I mean, I don't mind.
Hi. Seems like we're having some background noise, maybe from someone. If you know you're somewhere that's loud, you can mute yourself as well. Any questions or comments? Thanks for all of you who've had them so far.
I have, this is Jessica from Georgia. And I had a question for Andy and Jessica. I heard you both say earlier that you guys fly, and I've been recently affected this year. What tips that may be helpful, I'm nervous to fly again by myself. Any tips or anything that may be helpful for someone looking to do that in the future?
Yeah, but first I'd just say that you are super capable of flying. That's regardless of what your vision is. I know folks who have very limited vision or non-existent vision who can fly, and I want you to feel comfortable with that. But again, it's a comfort level thing. I'm not sure if you have seen an O&M or orientation mobility specialist, or if you have a white cane or something like that, or if that's something you're comfortable having, even if it's not something you need to use all the time. I would encourage you, if you have something like that, to take it when you go to the airport, even if you're completely on your own. If you have that, someone is likely either to come up to you, or maybe you can find someone and you can request an escort to your gate. So I would take an Uber from my apartment to the airport. I can find a door to get inside with my cane. And from there, I find a gate agent, ensure that I'm at the correct airline by just asking them, and then tell them I need an escort to my gate. For some folks, we may walk next to someone, and for others, we may get in a wheelchair. That's whatever you're comfortable with, or whatever your escort is most comfortable with. And you actually can go through security normally. Sometimes you have the added benefit of them skipping part of the security line for you, which is fantastic. And they will typically take you all the way to your gate, maybe even help you find something to eat if you want, but they'll leave you in a seat there and tell basically the, I guess, the gate agent, that's what I call the other person, so I don't know what they're all called, but the person at the actual gate, that you're there and that you may need assistance. And so when they ask people to begin boarding, they will probably have you registered for what's called pre-boarding, which is not actually pre-boarding. It's actually the beginning of boarding. And so you get to board the plane before others to make sure that you have the time you need and things like that. Obviously, if you have other questions, happy to answer them. But Jessica, correct me where I'm wrong.
Yeah, no, that all was awesome. I love to pre-board. I always pre-board because it just, I don't have to like jump over people, or it doesn't get weird when you're like trying to like get your bags. You just like, if you're Southwest, you pick your favorite spot. Or if you're other airlines, you get to go, you sit in your seat, they help you with your baggage. It's like princess treatment. And you just sit and you just chill, and then everybody kind of boards around you, and it's wonderful. I've had some like hit or miss kind of experiences when I ask for help going to like the, what did you call it when you like ask for help based on different disabilities? Hit or miss. I'm super, it's where I'm the most vocal of what I want. So by that I mean like I say like, no thank you, I don't need a wheelchair, I prefer to walk. If you stand next to me, I don't need to touch you. I'm pretty vocal about that sort of thing, because that, you know, like they just, there's a quick assumption we can't walk. There's a quick assumption they need to hold us, our arms, our hands, or something. And I'm like, don't touch me. So I'm super vocal about it. I'm not rude. I'm just clear that like I actually prefer to walk, and I actually can see you best on my left side. So I prefer you to walk on my left side next to me. And if you could give me visual or verbal cues, if I need to like come left or come right, just to kind of be aware. And normally with that kind of very upfront conversation, it makes it super easy. So yeah, I'm like, hey, on the way, can we pit stop? Can you tell me where the restroom is? Can you tell me where like I can maybe like stop and get a bottle of water or a snack, and then show me where my gate is? And I kind of ask them to give me the lay of the land, especially if I get there super early. So then, yeah, I still have flexibility. I can like sit at the gate for like a smidge, and then I want to like get up and I want to walk and go get something to eat. I actually know what's around me. I know what, like where the bathroom is. So I kind of have that flexibility, rather than getting pushed in a wheelchair and getting left in a wheelchair next to the gate door. There's so much more that we can still kind of be aware of. So super upfront conversation or communication is my biggest key. The other bonus is of that is that I should knock on wood when I say this. I always skip the security line. So for some reason, and I'm not sure I just am like super lucky, but for some reason, I always end up skipping the security line. So then I feel slightly bad, kind of. As we're passing through, they always help me kind of like with the bins and things like that, which is totally fine. It's a pain. I always travel with two laptops. It's super annoying. One work one and one personal. So that's not helpful, but it's very helpful in the sense that they help you kind of like gather your things. And I mean, I'm probably dropped off at the front door in Phoenix Airport and to the gate within maybe 35 minutes, knocking on wood. that I'm not jinxing myself. It really does make it a fast process. But I would say the biggest thing I've learned is clear communication. And hey, that's like the best place to kind of like, you know, try out some of the clear communication. Like, hey, I prefer this or prefer that. Sometimes it gets a little weird when you're having that conversation with maybe other people that you're close with. So perfect opportunity to test it out.
This is Wayne. I never, ever thought I would fly on my own. And doing the process of moving from Maryland to Florida, I flew back and forth many, many times. And I'd print off the boarding pass at home and get on the subway, which I was familiar with, and go down to Reagan National and go to whatever the flight that was catching and ask for escort help. Told them I was legally blind. And most of the time, like Andy said, they'd come up with a wheelchair. And I said, no, I don't need that. And they'd hold out their arm and no, I'm good. I just can't read the signs. Just help me to gate whatever it was. And they'd take me right there. And not all the time, but most of the time, they'd take me through security, undo the little belt, pass everybody. You know, people would look at me and I'm not dressed like anybody. I'm like, they'd look like, oh, who's he? And get me through security and take me right to the gate.
Hi, everybody. This is Richie.
Sorry. Go ahead.
This is Richie from Australia. Hello, everybody.
Hey, Richie.
I joined the call late. And so just hello, everybody. I've had the same. I've had a fair bit of experience traveling, including internationally. I've been over to the conference from Australia a couple of times. And I totally agree with what Andy and Jessica have just said. Being your best advocate is actually really important and telling them what you need and what you don't. But also what I find really useful is telling the airline in advance of that you are blind and what needs you have. And often they're really good with that if they know in advance what you need. And one thing we haven't discussed is when you arrive at the new airport, you can actually ask for somebody, and it's really standard practice for them to have somebody who will meet you at the door of the aircraft and take you to where you need to go, to the taxi or help you find your bag or go through immigration or customs or the like. And as people have said, that also means that you jump the queue a bit, which is fantastic. And for that reason, I used to always bring up my cane just so everyone knew why I was doing that, just so I'd feel better. And that's actually much quicker and much better. And that's the standard practice. But it's hard for them to do that if they don't know already that you're coming. If they know you're coming in the booking, then they actually can allow for that. Because it's often where the airport you're going to is the airport you don't know, where you're familiar with your home airport quite well, and so you can get around quite well. Fortunately, here in Australia, Qantas, National Airline, is pretty experienced in this, and they've got some good training. And so when I check in, the staff actually say, how can I best assist you, or how can we best make your trip well today, which is actually a really great question, rather than assuming that I need a wheelchair or assuming that I need an arm or something like that, which actually is really handy to do that. If I could also, just while I'm talking, just jump back to the question that was said earlier about other eye conditions at the same time as experiencing LHON. One thing that I've had really good experience with was that I lost my vision when I was 42, and it's now 5 years later. And apparently when we're about 43, apparently is the standard age for our eyes to become short-sighted or long-sighted. You know, I always had perfect eyesight, but apparently that's the magical age around the time of 42, 43, 44, where our eyes get worse anyway. And so while I was losing my vision for LHON, I also was becoming short-sighted, and I did not know that. And then an ophthalmologist actually said, oh, look, I think you should go and speak to an optician because I think you may have become short-sighted at the same time. And I did that and got tested, got some glasses, which I can now use for watching theater or watching film or TV. And it's much, much better. So I'd really recommend getting an eye test for that type of thing if you're about that age, or if you think you may have become short-sighted, because that's made a hell of a difference to me, be able to use glasses for some of those things. I still can't see well, of course, but I can still see a lot more than what I could see before.
Right. Thank you so much, Richie. Awesome to hear your voice, by the way.
Yeah, great. Great, so great to hear all your voices too. It's been a while.
Thank you all for
that. It's Teresa from Arizona. I just had a quick question.
Yeah, we can hear you, Teresa.
Okay. Does anyone feel the need to have a medical alert bracelet?
I can answer that a little bit. It's Megan. Sorry, I was trying to answer before, but I was totally muted. I don't have a medical alert bracelet, but I rely on my Apple Watch, and there's a fall feature on it that can detect either to 911 or your person of interest. So
that's yeah, I have that on my Apple Watch too. It's a great feature.
I think that's my answer to that one. But if anybody else wants to answer, but I want to talk about the airport stuff, and I had another question too.
Sorry.
No.
It's Richie again, Andy. If I can just butt in with one more thing I've just thought of about traveling. The other really good thing about pre-boarding, as Jessica was saying, is that I find that that's really useful for, particularly on international flights, you pre-board and then it means that the staff can actually recognize that you are the person who is vision impaired, because we don't look vision impaired and we get around normally. It therefore means that all the staff in your area of your plane can actually know that guy has got some trouble seeing, so that if you actually ask for help later on, then you don't have to explain yourself again. And so that's really useful. That's why I think pre-boarding is really useful. And of course, if there's ever an accident or any emergency, then of course you want them to know that you can't see very well and you can't respond to visual signals as well. So that's also why pre-boarding is really well. I used to when traveling internationally and there's forms to fill out for immigration, I always used to get the airline staff to help me fill those out for me, because I of course can't fill those out. So yeah, I think there's no end to actually how much you can ask them to help you. And I've always found airline staff really, really helpful.
I totally agree with that. And I was just thinking, you know, after you board, you have to figure out where the lavatory is, right? So, you know, once they know that you need help boarding, they know that you need help finding the bathroom. And once you, you know, need help finding that bathroom, you need to know what's in that bathroom. So they'll also tell you where the toilet flusher is or where the faucet is. And I know that sounds really silly, but it's little stuff that we definitely need help with. And that was kind of the stuff that I wanted to well, and also having the app of Aira. Aira will also help you guide around the airport if you don't want to have that guide. But that guide, you know, it definitely, you know, that was basically my trigger to say, I need a cane. I want that cane. I love that cane now. So yeah, that's kind of my story there. Sorry.
No, thank you for sharing.
Okay, so that brings me to my next question. How do you get a cane?
Sure. You said you live in Georgia, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. So normally you can contact your state or cities. They're called different things in different places, but Division for Blind Services, some kind of state blind agency where they have the ability to help you with different aspects of losing your vision. One of those is maybe set you up with an orientation and mobility specialist. That person will provide you a cane, but also that person will often provide you training on how to use your cane to navigate. I say all of that to say that's a way that you should be able to get a cane. It's not the quickest way to get a cane, because the quickest way to get a cane is Amazon. And you're gonna buy it, you're on your own, and it will show up and it can be used just like the cane I talked to you about. But if you actually are using your cane and relying on your cane, I do encourage you to get training from an orientation and mobility specialist, but sometimes that requires advocating for yourself quite a bit and getting pushed to the front of the line within your state. So that's my advice.
And orientation and mobility training can include being trained at an airport
frequently. Yes. You're exactly right. So thank you for that.
Has anyone used the OmniSense cane tip? I mean, I've been using, you know, my marshmallow tips on the sidewalks here, and they're kind of craggly, and I definitely jab my hip all the time and have huge bruises, which is not very attractive. I've been trying to push my O&M specialist to look into that for me, and she was interested at first and then was like, wait, no, it might not be good for certain, you know, visual impairments, but didn't know if anyone has had experience with that here.
I don't know anything about that. I have seen different folks talking about a smart cane that isn't the cane tip actually being tech involved in it, but something about the handle being different, such that it basically is constantly scanning waist up, because obviously the manual cane that we all are used to using basically helps you navigate by indicating things from your waist down that you might run into and or need to have a heads up about. But there are smart canes that exist that constantly are scanning and notifying you of things maybe that are higher or hanging for you. But I don't have any experience with either of those.
I think back when you hit like a brick in the road, or like
this is the one that collapses. Centimeter.
Not collapses, but like it rolls right over. It's much more forgiving than the marshmallow tip, where that'll give you feedback right away. And you might not need that. You might more need the feedback of, you know, steps or a curb or something to that nature.
I saw something about that on TikTok, but that's all of my experience. Anyone else?
I will work on it.
Sorry.
Yeah. Hello?
Maybe the guinea pig.
Hello?
Hey, we can hear you.
I started off with a rolling tip. And then when I went to mobility training out in Chicago, they tried to give me one of those hard tips. And that's what I tried for 6 weeks. I hated it. I really like the rolling ball tip a lot better. And I get almost as much sensitivity from that as I do the marshmallow tip, like you're talking about. And I find the same thing with you. Like, otherwise you kind of jab yourself a lot more with the hard tip. So personally, I like the ball better. But the mobility person was really wanting me to try the one that you're talking about with the more firm tip, the smaller tip without the ball on it.
This one is actually, it goes forward, backwards, and left and right. And I'm excited about it, but.
Thank you both. I should add now that we are about 9 minutes past the top of the hour. So if anyone has any questions, we'll take those. But before long, I do want to turn the recording off again, I guess. We'll see if this works. To see if folks want to say anything after we turn the recording off. So any questions that someone wants to get in before that point?
This is Cindy. And the one last thing I was going to add to the travel by plane, I've flown quite a bit. The past several times I've flown, the flight attendant actually comes over to me. This is something I hadn't experienced up until recently, and says, she tells me where all the emergency exits are. And she, you know, and I was like, well, why had I never thought of this before now? But they just started doing this with me recently. And I was thinking, I hadn't even thought about that I needed that. But so if you're on a flight and the flight attendant's not thinking through that, you know, some of those safety feature type things need to be gone over with you specifically. You know, it's almost like getting audio description. So it was awesome. And so if you're not getting that, then you might just make sure that the flight attendant goes over some of those things with you.
Right. You're exactly right.
This is Lisa. Can I just tell a funny experience?
on being on a plane, and just for those who maybe are afraid to speak up and say anything when they're on a plane, I travel a lot, mainly with my husband or whatever, and usually they do know, but for whatever reason, my husband doesn't want to make it aware to the flight attendants. So I had gotten up to, this is a funny story. So I'd gotten up to go to the bathroom, and I usually know where the bathroom is. Well, so I asked him before getting up, and we normally sit in like first class or business class or whatever. And I said, okay, is the bathroom, you know, on the left? And he kind of looked up and said, yeah. So I said, okay. So I got up there and I stood there for a second. I'm going, oh shoot, there's two doors here. I don't know which one. Well, guess which door I was trying to get into? The cockpit. So, lesson learned, went back to my seat, and I said, okay, I just tried to go into the cockpit to fly the plane. Can you please tell me where the bathroom is? So, for those of you who are afraid to ask for help on a plane, don't be afraid, because they may kick you off the plane for trying to get into the cockpit when you were trying to get into the washroom. And you can all laugh at me because I thought it was quite hilarious.
That's a good point. I mean, the cockpit is only better than trying to get in the door of the plane. So
yeah.
you went with the second worst door.
Yep. So from now on, I always ask, even if I'm traveling with somebody or if I'm traveling with somebody that isn't comfortable, I don't have an issue. It's always best to explain your situation. And like Richie said, if you can tell them ahead of time, they are more than willing to help you beyond belief. I mean, 9 times out of 10, they will offer a wheelchair, but one incident, my mom and I were traveling to a conference and they offered a wheelchair, and my mom, being as young as she is, and it was a long distance, she took the wheelchair and I walked beside. So in some cases like that, it's beneficial.
Yeah.
That's my 2 cents there.
Awesome. Thanks, Lisa.
Problem.
It's Richie again. And that's a great story, Lisa. I've probably done something like that before. But also another thing I didn't say before is that as much as I talked about actually letting the airline know in advance, also the frequent flyer programs allow you to put your blindness actually on the frequent flyer program, so that each time you make a new booking, you don't have to go through that process again. They'll actually will connect that information to you. Here in Australia, the Qantas, the national airline, has a special handling number, like a hotline for special handling, which is a terrible number, terrible name. But you can call them and you talk to them, and they're trained in disability, and you talk to them about what your needs are, and then they'll put that on your frequent flyer profile, all the detail about more than just simply blind, but they actually will explain in detail what you need and what you don't need. And then every time I fly, I don't need to actually redo that again. So think about that. If you actually are a frequent flyer, then you can do that through the process, and then that saves a lot of time, a lot of hassle.
That's awesome. Thanks, Richie. I think I'll go ahead and take the opportunity to turn the recording off in case there are folks who are waiting around and have questions or would like to make introductions once the recording's off. Before I do that, I will remind you all, you can email us at lhonlive@gmail.com. And our next call will be same time, same place on September 1st. Happy anniversary, everybody. Here we go.